joined now by Pitt Law Professor David Harris, who is a frequent guest on the program. And David, as you listened to the interview with John Dean, what were the impressions that you got about the stories he related and how that whole episode impacted attorney-client privilege?
Well, he's quite right, Paul, about the difference that Watergate made in terms of lawyers and legal ethics. The perception was quite strong in the aftermath of Watergate that lawyers needed a different set of standards, needed to pay more attention to that. So in the aftermath, virtually every school and finally all of them began to require legal ethics as a course in law school. That's certainly true at Pitt. It's true everywhere I've ever been, and it's a course that I get to teach once in a while. I really do enjoy it because it's a chance to have new lawyers understand the pitfalls of the profession as well as ways that you operate a law practice. So when John Dean says that there were no rules guiding what we should do when a client is basically out there breaking the rules and even committing crimes, now there is at least some guidance about that. Now, that guidance that he talked about or that his partner talked about with the duty of the lawyer to step forward when there's an ongoing crime or fraud as an exception to the attorney-client privilege, that's probably the most important change that has occurred. Usually, the attorney-client privilege is inviolate. The example that he used was it's like a priest and a penitent. It's like a doctor and a patient, another way of looking at it. We want clients to feel free to completely disclose everything to their lawyers because that's the way that we know the lawyers can be the most help to the client and ultimately help to resolve the problem. If the client holds back, it's just as if you were a patient and you didn't tell your doctor everything. How can they know how to cure you? How can they know what the real problem is? So we want the client to be completely forthcoming. The exception comes, though, when a client has disclosed that there is not just crime that has been committed, but crime that is ongoing or a fraud that is ongoing and might have impact on others in the future. The big change there has been in that situation, a lawyer may come forward and say to the client, look, what you're doing is wrong. If you keep it up, I'm going to have to make some disclosures here. And the disclosures are in the nature of going up the corporate ladder, as Mr. Dean said, or his partner said. First I go to the board, then I go outside the company if or the organization if I need to. And most of the time the thought was that this kind of thing will sway the client away from doing wrong or continuing the fraud. Before John Dean, the lawyer had basically two choices, to keep his or her mouth shut or quit, and that was it. Sometimes a court, if a court was involved or others like a bank signing off on a loan, might get the message from the lawyer quitting. But that was seen as a last resort, and you really couldn't make enough noise to guarantee when you were quitting that the others involved who might be damaged at some point would get the message. Now the lawyer goes to the superiors and says, look, you got to stop this or I'm going to have to make this public to some extent. I'm going to go to your superiors, the board, and I'm going to move from there. That did not used to be a set of available options.
But in this case, which is extraordinary, the client happens to be the president of the United States.
Yes.
So does that change things?
It doesn't. Nixon famously said in one of his tapes, that if the president does it, it isn't illegal. And one of the great lessons of the Watergate era is, oh, yes, it is. The president is not above the law. The Supreme Court said that when the special prosecutor was trying to get the Nixon tapes and the president was saying, no, executive privilege, the special prosecutor was saying, no, that's grand jury evidence. The Supreme Court said, you know what? Grand jury subpoenas apply to the president, just like they apply to any person on the block. And so it's harder to stand up to the president, I imagine, than it would be to maybe your corporate boss. But look, if your job depends on this, it's hard to stand up to the corporate boss too. So this is always a moment of courage for a lawyer. This is one of the things that I teach in the legal ethics class. You got to have the guts to do the right thing. Just having the rule available to you isn't always enough. There sometimes comes a moment of truth when you have to speak up.
So in John Dean's case, the way that he spoke up was, rather than in the example that you're providing, going to a board of directors, he's going to the Senate Watergate Committee, which ultimately, in this case, has power over the president. So did he do the right thing?
He did. The ironic part, though, was that the legal ethics rules at the time didn't provide him with that kind of guidance or option. He simply did it because it was right in his mind. He may have had other motivations, too. Who knows? But he did the right thing by going outside of the president and the president's circle and bringing the evidence to light.
So the legacy of all this, the lesson and the thing that we carry from that is?
Well, it's that lawyers don't have the right to keep evidence of crimes or frauds secret just because there is an attorney-client privilege. They have a duty to others outside of the attorney-client relationship who might be injured by the conduct of the client. To do more, to get beyond the relationship if necessary, to stop that fraud. We know it won't stop every client, but we now say, unlike in the past, that the lawyer has to consider more than just the relationship with his or her client. The ironic thing something that doesn't get noticed is that the strength of the crime fraud disclosure rules has always been a subject of debate within the profession. Many who represent large businesses, corporate clients, have fought those provisions through a series of revisions of the rules, the Ethics 2000 Commission, and so forth. So those rules could actually be stronger now than they are. However, they're a lot better than they were in the 1970s. That's the legacy of Watergate.
Pitt Law Professor David Harris, thank you as always for joining us.
My pleasure.